5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio. I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
Welcome yet again to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett. We're up to episode number 2 of season 5. I want to extend my appreciation, as always, to Justin Dove, who sponsored this podcast. If you manage a radio station and you're looking to give your brand the sound it deserves, check out Justin's work at coreimagestudio.com. On this episode, I'm thrilled to reconnect with Mike Greenberg. I had the good fortune of working at the ESPN Radio Network from 2004 to 2006, and I got to know Greeny a little bit while I was there. When I built and programmed 101 ESPN in St. Louis from September 2009 to May 2011, we chatted even more since Mike and Mike were my morning show. And what can I say? If you listen to Mike on the air, you know what he's about. I've always appreciated his preparation and his professionalism. He's in the NAB Radio Hall of Fame for the work he did on Mike and Mike, and he's since followed that up by starting Get Up, which has really settled into mornings on ESPN TV. Now, if you've been following the BSM website or the trades, then you know he's got a brand new show launching on Monday, August 17th at 12 o'clock Eastern on ESPN Radio. I'm sure it'll be well received by industry folks and listeners. We get into discussion about the content approach of the new show, handling negativity that seems to come whenever a new show is launched, as well as some inside radio stuff on his approach to teasing and interviewing, which I know a lot of industry folks will enjoy. One thing I didn't dive into with Mike was Mike Golic's departure, because although I'm comfortable asking anything, and I'm sure Greeny would be fine answering it, I kind of feel the end of Mike and Mike has already been well chronicled. Greeny gave a great tribute to his former partner on television. Golic made it clear there was an offer to reconnect, and Greeny just did a media tour for the past week addressing it repeatedly, so I'd prefer to go deeper into the weeds on strategy, formatics, handling criticism, and things of that nature, and do a different interview rather than repeating what's already been addressed. Before you jump ahead to that conversation, I do want to share a few thoughts, though, on ESPN Radio's new lineup, because it has been a big story for the past month. When you look at the new lineup and you talk to industry people, most of the response is positive when it comes to middays. Lebatard from 10 to 12, Greeny from 12 to 2, and Max Kellerman from 2 to 4 is very strong. All three of those personalities are familiar to sports fans, as well as executives, hosts, salespeople, and advertisers, so of course the response is supposed to be good. The bigger questions are in drive time. And Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mehente have been teamed up to take over the morning slot. Mike Golic Jr. and Chinedu Ogwumike are taking over in afternoons. When you launch a new show with people who haven't previously worked together, there, of course, are going to be questions about energy, chemistry, longevity, creativity, and collective ability. So much of a team show success depends on vision, understanding roles, settling into those roles, and developing a style and sound that highlights the show's strengths. Equally as important is being mentally tough, because social media can force a personality to question themselves and their decision-making if you pay too much attention to it. Knowing that these shows will need time to find their sound and collective strengths, it's imperative that Bristol executives give them time to get comfortable and win people over. I thought Rob Stats Guerrera wrote a great piece recently on the Barrett Sports Media website talking about that very issue. The one fair criticism of ESPN Radio has been that management has made too many changes over the past few years. Routine is a big part of growing an audience and satisfying advertisers, and though change can be a lot of fun, it's hard for people to form habits with shows when they're constantly coming and going. If an affiliate market manager or program director is skeptical about this new lineup, it's probably because Mike and Mike, Golic and Wingo, Stephen A. Smith, Bomani Jones, Will Kane, and First Take Your Take, just to name a few, were all on the ESPN Radio Network at some point recently, and now they're gone. There should be excitement for Greeny, Max, and the new Drive Time shows on these local stations, but if they're not in place a year or two from now, that's not going to sit well with affiliates. The talent is there. Now they need time to let the meal bake. What I wasn't crazy about, but I do understand, was ESPN Radio's decision to move on from Jim Cutler. He's one of the best voice talents in the business, bar none, and he still has his fastball. I understand that sometimes you just need to put a fresh coat of paint on the house, and let's face it, Jim was there for 26 years, so it's not like he didn't have an incredible run with the network. I just think there was more in the tank, and I wish that the relationship had continued. The bigger questions going forward, though, are what does the future with Dan Le Batard look like, and are executives still confident in Jason Fitz? Let me start with Fitz. There's a lot to like. He's got a great sound, good style, energy, works hard, and he's been climbing rapidly until recently. I know he and Sarah Spain are going to do a good job together at night. I don't doubt that. I just wonder if you were in his shoes and you were elevated to mornings, then landed a midday time slot after Stephen A. left, and then got sent back to nights, you're probably going to question where you fit in, especially when the network just installed four new weekday shows. For Le Batard, that's a more complex situation. I don't have any inside knowledge, but it's well documented that Dan has his fans and critics in the company, and he did lose an hour recently on ESPN Radio. Yes, his show is better in digital form, so there is merit to what ESPN said about wanting to focus more on extending his brand that way, but usually when things like this happen, other sharks smell blood in the water, and eventually they attack. ESPN's put a lot into the Le Batard brand, so the thought of him not being there in the future is hard for me to envision, but if Dan feels an opportunity and support would be greater elsewhere, I don't think many would be shocked. The question at this point is, how much does ESPN believe and want to be in business with the Le Batard crew? But those questions will be answered in due time. One that we don't need to wait long for is the return of Mike Greenberg to ESPN Radio's weekday lineup, which takes place on Monday, August 17th at 12 o'clock Eastern. And I'm now joined by the host of that very program, Mr. Mike Greenberg. Greeny, I know you're a busy man, so let's jump right in. The new show, as I just mentioned, starts in a few days. It's hard to believe you haven't been on national radio in a little more than 2.5 years, which is nuts. Much of the time, of course, has been spent focusing on building up Get Up, which is now a television success for ESPN. So I guess where I'd like to begin is, when did you start thinking about a possible return to ESPN Radio?
When I launched the TV show, I knew that that was going to require 100% of my time, energy, and effort. And it certainly did. Launching a brand new TV show and trying to create something in that space is a big job. And for the first, I'd say at least 18 months that we were doing it, I felt I needed to be connected to that pretty much every minute of every day, because we were still figuring out exactly how we wanted to do it, what we wanted to do, making sure that the staff and I were on the same page. There was just a lot to get done. You have to do two things when you create a new show. You have to figure out what you want it to be, and then you have to make sure you can execute it repeatedly. It's one thing to say, okay, this is what you want to do. It's another thing to be able to do it every day.
Right.
And so sometime in probably, you know, call it the middle of football season last year, I think I felt we can do this every day. We've got the right idea. And so that is in no way to suggest that I checked out or I'm checking out of it in any way mentally, but that this is something that is now rolling along and does not require my sort of being involved in every meeting and every conversation and being on top of it every second. So that's when I started thinking about what else could I start putting some of my time and energy into. I've written a few books in the past, and that was my first idea, that I would write another book. And I actually did start that, and I've written about half of one. And then, as has been the case almost every time something good has happened to me in my career, the phone rang and I answered it. And something that I was not expecting at all came up. And it was the people who run ESPN calling to ask me if I would be interested in going back and doing a couple of hours on the radio, as they were thinking of breaking it up into shorter shows. And all the stuff that you're seeing now coming into play, that was the vision several months ago. I don't remember exactly when this was, but it was right around the time that everything started to shut down. So I thought about it for a little while, and my initial reaction was that I wasn't 100% sure if I wanted to make that commitment, because I know what it takes to do this. Like, I have a lot of respect for what it takes to make a daily show work, whether it's radio or television or any other sort. Mm-hmm. It requires consistency, and what is the expression? 90% of success is just showing up. It just requires being there and doing the work every day. And I needed to make up my own mind that I was prepared to make that commitment. And when I sort of thought it through, I thought about where my life is right now, what my schedule looks like, where I'll be a year from now. Stacey and I will be empty nesters a year from now, which is impossible for me to believe, but it's true. I thought, this feels like the right time and the right opportunity, working for people that I trust. And so I said, all right, let's give it a try. What I knew going in, and what I said to my wife and my agent and everyone else, is if we do this, we're doing it right. Like, I'm not going back into this to just have a side job that is a radio show where I just show up and take some phone calls and call it a day. Like, this has to be a priority. I don't have one priority over the other now. I have a television show that means everything to me, and I have a radio show that means everything to me, and I have to approach it that way. So that's where I am with that now, and we've been doing a little bit of rehearsing, and we've been getting ready, and I think we're in a very good place. So I think we will launch in a good place next week, and the show will be good. But as was the case with Get Up, and as was the case with Mike and Mike, and as is the case with any show when it first starts, it'll take a little time to figure out exactly what I need it to be and what I want it to be and how to do it. But I'm very confident that, you know, given a little bit of time, we'll have something really good on the air, and hopefully in time for the start of the football season or sometime early in the football season.
I want to ask you in a moment about the daily radio content and your vision for how it'll lay out. But you just mentioned about early expectations and how things get better. And you saw that firsthand when you guys launched Get Up, it seems, especially in 2020 and even, you know, the last few years, social media, people just can't wait to crap all over something that's brand new. And then eventually things slow down, people get in a routine, and everything starts to settle in. And now, you know, Get Up went from the first couple of days, I remember defending the show, going, give it a break. It's been on the air for 8 hours, and you guys are ready to write it off. And now everybody says, I love the show and I respect the show. Along those lines, you know what it's like in Morning Jive on ESPN Radio. You've got a brand new show going into the network with Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Subin Mahente. What advice have you given those guys to help them stay sane launching a brand new show? Because as you know, they're going to have a target on their back.
I think you can't worry about that stuff. You know, so I've launched two shows in my life. I launched Mike and Mike, and we had the extraordinary benefit of total anonymity. I mean, even you didn't know we existed then. And by the time anyone cared that we had a show, we had already figured out how to do a show. Like, right. By the time anyone knew of us, we were good. Get Up was obviously 180 degrees on the opposite side. To your point, the world was waiting from day one to put us under a microscope. And we had our growing pains under that microscope, and that isn't fun. But what I will tell you, and what I will tell anyone who asks me, is if we figure out how to do the show right and we make a good show, people will listen to it and they will like it. Or in the case of Get Up, they will watch it and they will like it. And that's exactly what happened. So when you first start, just because something is new and different, look, people who have been listening to Morning Drive on ESPN Radio going back to even before I started with Mike. For the last 22 years, I've heard the same voice. So no matter what these guys do, it's going to be different, and there are going to be people who are going to say, it's not what I'm used to, it's not what I want. But what I would advise those three guys, and they don't need me to tell them this, they all know, is just focus on getting the show right. If you do a good show, the advantage of being on ESPN is unimaginable. It's overwhelming. As I always said about Get Up, we're on a channel people watch. So when we figure this thing out, they're still going to be there to see, as opposed to launching in a place that no one is paying any attention to otherwise. If they don't like you one day, they may never come back. I think that's a big advantage. So those guys will launch. They'll have some really good ideas, and they'll have some stuff totally wrong. As I've said a million times, you can never figure out how to get something right until you first get it at least a little bit wrong. People will say whatever they'll say, but that won't really matter. Like, what people say is very, very transient. It's passing, and it's not really meaningful. What's meaningful is, are you figuring out, are you from the very beginning figuring out how to make the show great? Because ultimately what will determine their success is whether or not the show is great. Either the show will be great and then it'll be an enormous success, or it won't be great and then it won't go the way everyone wants it to. Now, I think they have an excellent chance to be great. It has all the makings of the right stuff. So that's the only thing I think that you can focus on in that circumstance. Just focus on making the show great. And once it is, people will listen to it and people will like it.
So in terms of your Daily Show content, you're going solo now. A lot of people are going to look at what you do and they're going to compare it to what you do on Get Up and what you did on Mike and Mike. And obviously you're flying solo. Although you'll have some people coming through, you're not going to be left there for 2 hours without anybody to talk to. You know, it is going to be a little bit different approach. You're also in midday, something that you're not used to doing. How many segments, guests, are there going to be monologues, interaction? How do you envision this show ultimately making a difference?
So let's start with the midday. Of all the things, that's the one I'm most excited about, and I'll tell you why. I've been doing mornings on radio and TV for the last 21 years. And what very seldom happens in the morning in sports is anyone getting hired or fired or traded. Those things don't tend to happen early in the morning.
Right.
The things that constitute big breaking sports stories almost never happen on my watch. And the rare occasions between radio and TV over the last 20 years that we've had big breaking stories on the air, I love it. It is so, I find it incredibly invigorating, chasing big stories, getting people on the phone, on the fly, cover the story, pound the news, get the latest. I love that. It's what I love about live broadcasting. There's the immediacy and the intimacy are the two things that make radio in particular special. And we can talk about intimacy after, but start with the immediacy. When there's big breaking news, the radio is as good a place as any to go to get coverage of it. And you should be covering that. So I'm super excited because I think in the hours that I'm on, I'm counting on there being a ton of breaking news. So I have already told my staff that when there is breaking news, I look forward to, if it happened every day, I'd be delighted, ripping up everything we had planned and just go. Let's just chase the news. We have resources that no one else in the industry can match to use to cover stories in any sport. So let's be all over it. So that's first. That's the thing I'm most excited about. I get a real charge out of covering breaking news in a way that is, like I say, it's not something I've had the opportunity to do often enough with my hours. So I'm really looking forward to that. As far as the second piece of it, what I have found on Get Up, the place we have arrived on my TV show is very, very fast paced. And that works. And your audience tells you that what they like, and that's what they like. They like us to cover a ton of material fast with a lot of people. And I'm really playing point guard. I'm really kind of the at the center of all of this, and I'm just firing it around. Now you go. And I have a great time doing it. I love it. But what frequently gets lost in that is my ability to weigh in any meaningful way on stories that I'm very interested in.
Right. You have you become Jason Kidd instead of Allen Iverson.
Yeah, exactly.
You want a shot every now and then.
Exactly right. And, you know, on my radio show with Mike and Mike, I was able to do both of those things. And so in this case, my goal is to take the stories that I felt really reverberated best on the TV show in the morning, cover them in the midday. It's only 2 hours later, so it should remain, for the most part, fresh. And the twist on it, I will bring some of the people back. Like, to your point, I'm not going to be sitting there by myself for 2 hours ever. I'll have on all of these same people who, you know, we can engage in discussions. But the discussions can be longer, whereas a TV segment is a long one, is 3.5 minutes. You know, we can do, you know, radio. I can do 5, 6, 7 minutes if I want to on a topic that I like.
Right.
And instead of having four people chiming in with their opinion and none of them being me, we can have two people discussing it and one of them can be me. So I'm looking forward. I think the radio show will be my opinion, my opportunity to give a lot more opinion than I generally have the opportunity to do on Get Up. So that, if I were to describe to you the single biggest point of emphasis for me, it would be that. I'm excited for the chance to do that again because I've missed it a little bit. And there's also an element of involving your audience in the discussion that exists in radio that doesn't exist in television. That's where the intimacy comes in. And TV, generally, as a general rule, you are talking to your audience. And in radio, as a general rule, you are talking with your audience, at least if you're doing it right, in my opinion. And yep. So I'm looking forward to that. I do anticipate having a lot of interaction with the audience in the show, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
You know, it's interesting. You're going into this during the craziest year of my lifetime. It's probably the craziest of yours, especially when it comes to, you talked about breaking news and chasing the stories, and we've, you know, talked about results and coaches get fired and all these great decisions, except right now, a lot of the stories that we're chasing are really issues that go beyond sports. You talked about having the ability to stretch content where some of that TV time, you might spend 3 minutes on a topic where on radio you may spend 13. Do you envision this show touching some of the social issues a little stronger because you have that time? Or will you take a similar approach with Get Up and trying to make sure you don't dive too deep into it because you know that some will love it and some won't?
I don't think that the time there is necessarily the factor. When that was at the forefront of the sports discussion, when that is at the forefront of the sports discussion, then I think it's a perfectly appropriate subject matter for shows on TV or radio, and I think it has to be given the appropriate time. That's not the same thing as talking about whether, you know, the manager should have put the hit and run on in this situation. We're now talking about much more important issues that need to be handled sensitively and appropriately. And whatever time needs to be allotted to deal with those in a manner that is sensitive and appropriate, then that's the amount of time that will be dedicated to it. And I think it's an intrinsic part of what's going on in the sports world right now. It's a huge part of what the NBA's return has been. I believe it'll play a huge role in the return of the National Football League. This is a subject, if we're talking specifically in this case about Black Lives Matter or any social issues that we might be discussing, those are things that I think are at the forefront of the sports conversation right now. And to ignore them, I think, would be irresponsible. I think that you have to talk about them because it's what's happening. Our job is to reflect what is happening in the sports world. And that's a big part of what's happening in the sports world. And the challenge, the job of someone like me, of all of us in this industry, if you're going to do that right, is to make sure that you do it in a manner that is appropriate, where all sides can be heard. And there is, as to your point you just made, enough time for everyone to be able to say what they feel. I have asked a lot of people on my show over the course of the last few months to speak from the heart and about matters that are incredibly personal. And you can't say to someone, I want you to do that, and I'm going to give you 90 seconds to do it. You just can't do that. That's not fair to them, and it's not doing anyone any good. And most important, it's not the right thing to do, and it's not fair to the person you're asking to do it. So I don't have a number in mind for stuff like that. I don't know if it's 6 minutes or 12 minutes. You just sort of know it when you know it. But when we handle that material, and we certainly will regularly as seems appropriate, you know, you have to give it the amount of time to breathe that it demands, because there's no other way to do it in a way that is even remotely meaningful.
I know one thing that's got to make you happy is the network has definitely come out and made sure that you're getting local station support out of the gate. You know, this show launches in New York, in Chicago, in Los Angeles, which is very strong. And you know the game. You're always going to have certain local markets that clamor for local, don't want the national. What do you tell, though, the listener who's skeptical about a national show of why they should give you some time to win them over? Because I think so many people, they just look sometimes at where a show is located, not necessarily what's coming through the speaker. And that seems to fuel a lot of the fire. What do you tell them, though?
Well, I would hope that people will give me some benefit of the doubt. I have done this before, and I haven't forgotten how. And I think that piece of it, here's been my philosophy. And Jason, you and I talked about this years ago when you were running the station in St. Louis and all over the place. What I learned from that experience, from hosting a nationally syndicated morning drive radio sports talk show for almost 18 years, is at the end of the day, the most important thing that you can control is the quality of the show.
Mm-hmm.
If I do the show that I'm capable of doing, people will like it. And what I can't control is what different people in different markets think they want. The program directors, everyone has their own concerns, and I get it. I'm not sitting in their chair, and they're not sitting in mine. I don't know what their considerations are, and I can't allow myself to worry about that. I have to do, and I think I have a few advantages based upon a wealth of experience. I mean, I tried to calculate this at one time recently, and I think I've been on the air in my life right around 32,000 hours live. If you combine TV and radio, I think I've been on the air live 32,000 hours, something
wow.
like that.
You're going to finish at 50,000 at least, right?
We'll see. I mean, I have done a lot of hours, and so I think I've learned some of the stuff. And what I will say is, I believe I'm going to do a really good show, and I hope that people who have listened to me in the past or who watch me in the mornings, you have some sense of what my approach is, what I'm going to do. It's not going to be that different from what you've been accustomed to in the past, as far as how I am on the air, and I'm just me, as I was on the radio and I am on TV. And I hope that people will like it everywhere. My job is to do a show that people will like everywhere, whether they're on one coast or the other or anywhere in between. And look, my show, if we just sort of look at where we were in the past, I mean, my previous radio show, we did very well in Chicago. We had times we did very well in New York. We did very well in a lot of other markets. And it is my hope that we will do very well for all of those people, every market that we're in, going forward. One of the things that I told Zubin is the most challenging about this is that when you're a television host at ESPN, you really only work for one person or a very small collection of people. When you're hosting a big radio show like this and you're in all these, and you're working for so many different people, they have so many different interests. There's so many different things they want and need from you that you can make yourself crazy trying to figure out what they all are and make all of them happy. You can't do it. So ultimately, where Mike and I netted out, and I think worked for us best, was let's just do the show we believe in. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do the show I believe is the best radio show I can do. My goal is to do a great radio show every day. And that's the best I can do. And then let's see where the chips fall regarding all the rest of it. But much of that is stuff that you can't control anyway. So you can make yourself crazy worrying about it or not. What you can control is doing a great show. And so that's what I'm going to be trying. I've already started, and that's what I will be trying like crazy to do starting noon next Monday.
Two parts of your game, if you will, that I find are great. I think you're an exceptional interviewer, and there are a lot of programmers, and I've used you as an example with talent, and I know many others have, who will always talk about the greeny teasing, okay? I'm sure a lot of these things, you mentioned 32,000 hours on the air, after you do something for a while, you're going to become good at it because that's a lot of practice. But at some point, to become good at teasing, to become good at interviewing, you had to do things, you had to make mistakes and learn from them, and you started coming up with some kind of formula to make sure you were effective at it. Take me behind the curtain, if you will. When you're building a show and you're thinking about the conversations you're going to conduct or what you have to say going to a break to keep someone wanting to listen or watch what you're doing, do you script things in advance? Do you do it off the cuff? How did you get to the point where you were very comfortable and smooth at it?
If you're not scripting your teases in advance, you're not doing your job if you're a talk show host. Being a talk show host involves a lot of fundamentals. There are fundamentals of this stuff. There's blocking and tackling involved. It's not just turning a microphone on and talking. You can have the greatest personality in the world. You can know everything about sports. You can be hilariously funny. Those things don't make you a talk show host. A host, the responsibilities of the host go well beyond that. And teasing is critical, critically important. If you don't make people want to continue listening, then when you go to a break, what reason is there for them not to leave? You have to, your job is to make people stay. Listening to the commercials is the most important thing someone can do. If people aren't listening to the commercials, if people aren't hearing the messages of your sponsors, if people aren't patronizing your sponsors, you don't have a business. Mm-hmm. You just have a show. But a show in and of itself is just for fun. It becomes a business when you involve your partners. That's a critically important part of it. The greatest compliments that anyone ever paid me over the years that I was hosting a radio show was when they would tell me how closely they associated me with my partners, with the corporate partners, the people who sponsored me. And that will be the case again. If I'm not doing the work for those people, I don't have a job. What am I doing? I'm just sitting on the radio talking. So there are fundamentals. This is a business. And people who don't understand that are in the wrong line of work. So teasing is a critically important part of what we're doing, teasing vertically and horizontally. And I do both of those. And yes, I absolutely write them. Sometimes you have to change them on the fly and all of that.
Yep.
But for the most part, I like them. I love trivia as a tease. I always have. We did a ton of it on Mike and Mike. We do it every day on Get Up. I love it. I will definitely plan to do it on the radio show. So teasing is a critically important part of what we do. And then interviewing, I credit a lot of that to my education. I went to what I consider to be firmly the best school of journalism in the world, the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. And that's where I learned that. The ability to ask questions and listen to the answers is, that's the job. And that's a journalist's job. And when you're a talk show host, you're not always a journalist. A lot of what we do, a lot of what I do on the air is not journalism, but some of it is. And when you have that ability to shift into that mode, that's that's an important skill to have in your repertoire. And I'm very grateful for the education I had in that, because that's where it began. And then, to your point, you just practice it and get better at it and learn from your mistakes. And trial and error is the only proven method in human history for figuring out anything. I think I'm better at it now than I was years ago. And I'd like to think that two or three years from now, I'm going to be better at it than I am now.
See, I just thought you built a studio apartment in your house for John Sawatzky and had him stay there all day. So that seems to work pretty good.
Well, John Sawatzky was excellent. I wasn't going to go that in the weeds, but since you mention it, I am a firm believer in John's methods. And I remember I still have my notes. I did 3 days with him early in my tenure on Mike and Mike. I forget what year it was, 2001 or 2, something like that. I did a 3-day seminar with him, and I still have the notes. I haven't been in my office in months now, but I have them on pinned to my bulletin board in my office. And I look at them every single day. And the philosophy that John has about interviewing is something that I firmly believe in, and something that I think I use every day.
Best training program I've ever sat through. I'm going to get you out of here in 1 second, but I do want to bring up one thing, because I saw you acknowledge Jamie Samuelson on Twitter. And I didn't realize you guys knew each other. And we're talking on the day where he was just laid to rest in Detroit, unfortunately. Very sad story. I didn't know him. I talked to him a few times when I was in the Bay Area. But obviously you crossed paths with him. How did you guys get to know each other? And where were you when you found out the news?
We both went to Northwestern, but we did not know each other. He's a couple of years younger than me, 2 or 3 years younger than me. So I didn't know him in school, but we both started out our careers trying to make it in radio sports in Chicago. So we were just in the same place at the same time a lot. And we figured out that we both had jobs in Northwestern, and we struck up a friendship and became very good friends for a couple of years. We were both in our early 20s. We were both single. We were running around Chicago covering sports. That was at a time when the TV show Seinfeld was on, and we were both crazy fans of that show, and we bonded over that. You may remember how the people who loved Seinfeld were very into it, and he was and I was very into it, so we bonded over that, and we just covered sports, and we had a very good time, you know, trying to make it in the business together. And he ultimately went to Detroit, and I ultimately went to ESPN, and we did not stay in close touch, but I would still see him every now and again. You'd see each other at Super Bowls, you know, the way you see people in the business.
And
we'd exchange notes every now and again, and it wasn't as though we remained close friends. I didn't want to overstate that, but he was always someone that I remembered very fondly and liked a lot, and certainly when I saw or spoke to, I was always very happy to. And then I saw when he came on his radio show a week before he died, and people posted a bunch of notes about how he had announced. No one even publicly knew that he had cancer. I saw those notes on social media, and I sent him a text that he never responded to, saying, "Hey, I just saw this. I had no idea how bad it was." So I sent him a note, something along the lines of, "Hey, man, you know, wishing you a speedy recovery. Please let me know if there's anything we can do." That kind of thing, mm-hmm. Not having any idea how dire it was. And that was on a Monday. And 6 days later, on a Sunday, I woke up to a text from my friend Dave Revson, who was a fraternity brother of Jamie's in college and was very good friends with Jamie, knew him much better than I did, mm-hmm. and was very close to him. And I woke up to a text from Rever saying, "I hate to be the one to tell you this, but Jamie died yesterday." And so that's how I found out about it. And, you know, what can you say? I mean, you know, if there's one meaningful thing that I've been able to do in my 24 years at ESPN. It is our connection to the V Foundation for Cancer Research, which I believe in so strongly, and I'm so proud of our connection to it. And, you know, I've said it a million times. We've all said it a million times. No one's life is not touched by this disease. A 48-year-old man with three teenagers is gone now, and it's an unjust tragedy because cancer is just the worst. Cancer is just the cruelest thing ever. And so it made me unbelievably sad. It made me think a lot about my connection to the V Foundation. When I posted a few thoughts on Twitter, I was struck by the emotion of the response that I got from so many people in Detroit, people who listened to him daily and how much they loved him, what an enormous impact he had made on that market in over 20 years there. So that made me feel good. You know, it made me feel good that I remember him when we were in our early 20s. And we were both wondering if we'd ever make it, or if we were just kidding ourselves, and that we should go into some real line of work. You know, my everlasting sympathies are with his wife and his kids and everybody who loved him. You know, I knew him as a young man, and I really liked him a lot. And the fact that he's gone at 48 is just the saddest thing I could possibly imagine.
You hate seeing that, and obviously I think you summed it up perfectly there. I want to end on a more positive note. At least I hope it's positive. Sports betting, as you know, has become a big thing, so I'm going to have you basically put your bet on this. If we're talking in December, mm-hmm. Greeny, are we looking at sports has made it through an NFL and college football season, or are we back where we were in March, April, and May?
I don't think we're back where we were in March, April, and May. I think the NFL makes it. I think the questions about college are significant because I think they have totally different considerations. So that one I wouldn't bet on. If I were casting a bet, I would not bet in the affirmative on college, and I would bet heavily in the affirmative on the NFL. And then by that time, I don't know exactly when the next NBA season will begin or the next NHL season will begin. But sometime around then, I would imagine they'll come rolling back around. So I don't think we will, I hope, and I would not bet that we will ever go back to this total shutdown from a sports perspective or otherwise that we were in March and April. I certainly hope we don't. And again, as far as if I were placing bets, bet heavily in the positive on the NFL. And if I have to bet on the college, I would bet much less heavily that it does not make it. And I would hope heavily that I lose that bet.
The brand new show, Greeny, premieres Monday, August 17th, 12 o'clock Eastern on ESPN Radio. You can also find Mike on television each morning on ESPN's Get Up and follow him on Twitter at ESPN Greeny. Great hearing your voice, man. Good luck with the new show. I'm excited for you and look forward to checking it out.
Well, thank you. And thank you for everything that you're doing. I enjoy following it. I enjoy seeing what you're doing for the business. And it's nice to see that, you know, how passionate you are about it and how seriously you take it. And I'm fascinated to see the reaction to it. You know, I remember when I started in sports radio, when people thought sports radio was a joke. You know, WFAN started in 1989. We started the Score in Chicago in January of 92, and people made fun of us. People thought that sports radio was just a fad and a joke, and you can't put people on the air who aren't, you know, in the locker rooms and who aren't columnists and all this stuff, and you can't let fans just say whatever they want to say. So to see the growth of it has been really gratifying for me. My career really spans the entirety of the growth of this. You know, and to see someone like you who takes it so seriously and chronicles it in a meaningful way, I think is terrific. So I appreciate that you do that, and I've enjoyed this conversation. We'll do it again.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.